Blog Talk Radio.
Meditation. And I'm going to be doing this from the perspective of know thyself. The particular form of meditation that I've been practicing for, well, gosh, probably about 8 years now is all. But the particular form of meditation that I practice is mindfulness meditation. And in mindfulness, we do focus on coming to a deeper understanding of yourself, why we do the things we do, why we're feeling the way we feel, and also coming to a deeper understanding of the world around us and our role in it, our part in it. And ultimately, mindfulness meditation should get us to the point where we see everything as connected, everything as a unity, all things, all peoples, all beings as essentially one. So when I talk about meditation, I speak about meditation from the perspective of mindfulness breath meditation. And that's, we don't do mantras, although I'm not opposed to doing a mantra. I've tried that myself, and you know, there's something, a benefit to be had from mantra meditation. But we just focus on the breath, you know, breathing in through the nose, breathing out, and I would say preferably through the nose, and just becoming aware of that breath and focusing on that breath and going deep into that focus and just letting ourself, our being, go wherever it is it needs to go at that point in time. And to me, that's what I call meditation. Now, a lot of other people have other practices which they call meditation. And for some people, it's just relaxing rather deeply before they go to bed, or listening to a guided meditation or soft music, which is helpful, is beneficial. And they kind of gauge the success of their meditation by whether or not they achieve a relaxed state, whether or not they achieve a good night's sleep. And they feel as long as they got a good night's sleep, they did a good meditation. And to me, meditation is much more than just that. I mean, those things are a good start. But meditation itself, what I would call meditation, is something that we need to take a lot more deeply if we're going to see more benefits than just stress reduction and a good night's sleep. Of course, we all have to start somewhere. And that's how I got started in meditation, is that I was at a point where I was totally stressed out. My life was in chaos. My body, my physical nature, was in chaos. I was about 100 pounds overweight, a physical and emotional wreck. And I needed something, some sort of a practice that would help me keep my sanity. And I hit upon mindfulness meditation. And I think it worked. A matter of fact, for me, it worked perfectly. But when I first got started out, all I wanted to do was relax. All I wanted to do was to keep my sanity from a day-to-day basis. And if I could get a great night's sleep, that was an added benefit too. So, there's something to be said for stress reduction and getting a good night's sleep. But as I continued my practice of meditation, what I later discovered for myself to be true is that not only could I look forward to stress reduction and a good night's sleep as being two fruits of meditation, I also began to become aware of a great many other things, and I'm going to get into that in the next few minutes as we get through this presentation. But what draws us to meditation in the first place may be something simple, like, just trying to relieve the stress of our day-to-day grind or trying to get that good night's sleep. But if we focus on deepening our meditation and continuing with our meditative practice, we're going to see so much more than just that. We're going to see growth on physical, emotional, spiritual, karmic levels, what I like to call the shamanic level, and just something which is indescribable, which I will simply refer to as bliss. Just sit down and bliss out. Just using the meditation to connect to higher spiritual realms and to feel happy, glad, blessed, blissful in the present moment. And now for that to happen, at least in my own experience, and during this hour, I will be speaking of just my experience, and it may match your experience. My experience may differ from your experience. This is not necessarily something that I studied in a book, read in a manual, or learned during seminars. This is just something which I learned by reading deeply what Ajahn Brahm calls the book of meditation, which is just sitting down, closing your eyes, breathing in and out, and learning directly from meditation, from the world of spirit. And other practitioners probably do and will have their different perspective on things. But these are just things that I've learned, just by sitting down and being quiet. Now, some practitioners, and I think they do this in order to gain more disciples, to make the practice of meditation more appealing, they will recommend that you spend 15 to 20 minutes a day in meditation. And for me, I would say 15 to 20 minutes a day is a good start, but it should not be your endpoint. It shouldn't be the goal, the final goal to which we set for ourselves in sitting down and doing a good meditation. 15 to 20 minutes a day is long enough if you want to relieve stress, if you want to get a good night's sleep, you want to do that shortly before bedtime, that's a good thing to do. But if you want to gain the other fruits of meditation, I would recommend 1 hour a day, and preferably 1 hour in a sitting. When I first started meditation, I was doing 1 hour at a time, three times a day. So I was up to 3 hours a day, and that was just where I began as a beginner. And for me, I was looking for something that would help me to de-stress. And I realized from listening to other practitioners of mindfulness meditation that preferably a longer period of sitting was best. Now, of course, this can vary from one practitioner to the next. But if you want to get the fruits of meditation, which I will begin to talk about here shortly, you have to be willing to put the time into it. In spirituality, there are many spiritual teachers that engage in serious spiritual work, and I count myself as one of those. There are also spiritual teachers who are doing what I like to call spiritual entertainment. They're not really wanting to take the disciple, the seeker, to the deeper levels. They just want to entertain, keep people happy, make them feel good, and then that's it. You know, collect their money and send them out the door. Or collect their money before before they even get into the door. But when it comes to spiritual trainers and teachers, there are those that look upon themselves as being a serious spiritual worker. And then there are others who see themselves or actually conduct themselves as spiritual entertainers. And then there are still others who, in order to hold people's attention, try to become a little bit of both. And some of my favorite spiritual teachers are those who are spiritual workers and spiritual entertainers. And they know how to mix the two together so as to impart something serious to the student, but also make sure the student has a good time and just keeps the student in a relaxed frame of mind where they are going to gladly receive what it is that the teacher has to give. And I know one that I love, Ajahn Brahm of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And I think he's a master of both forms. And, you know, both are necessary, but I think if we're going to be taking meditation and taking it seriously, taking it to its deeper level, we have to not focus so much on spiritual entertainment, although that can be a benefit, but to focus more so on the serious spiritual work. And spiritual work takes time. And I would recommend 1 hour a day, and don't expect results right away. Give it a few months. And if you're seeing a few results, good. Then give it a few years. And if at the end of a few years you've seen a few more results, but you're still not fully enlightened, that's great. Give it a few more years. You know, give it the daily time that it needs in order to work for you, and be willing to let it take as long as it's going to take. You know, Buddha became enlightened after 6 years of meditation. I've been meditating for 8 years myself, and I'm just getting started. There are others who have been meditating for much, much longer, you know, many decades, still haven't achieved that fully enlightened state. But it's not really a process where we expect results right away. It's a journey which we take with joy, and whatever happens, we accept as being our path. I'm going to pause, play a short piece of meditative music by Francesca Genco, and then we'll begin to discuss the various levels of Know Thyself. Thank you. meditation, know thyself. I'm going to have, what is it, about five different levels here of knowing thyself that we can enrich through the practice of meditation. But in order for this to work, it has to be, at least from my point of view, a consistent practice of meditation. And by that I mean making a daily commitment to meditating for a set period of time. And for me, that would be 1 hour a day, preferably all at one sitting. Now, for those who are just getting into a meditative practice, you know, something more realistic might be 15 to 20 minutes. But once you achieve that, don't stop there. Be willing to go for an hour, to work yourself up to an hour. And if you're one of those people that say, I'm too busy, I don't have time, that's one of the favorite book titles that I see on the internet, is Meditation for Busy People. And if you feel that you're too busy to sit down and meditate for 1 hour, the teaching that I love to give, that I heard from another teacher, sit down and meditate for 2 hours. If you're too busy to sit down and meditate for 2 hours, then shoot for three. If you're too busy to shoot for 3 hours, then spend all day. If you're too busy to meditate, from my perspective, you know, you're just too busy. You have to prioritize and make the time to do what is healthy and spiritual rewarding for yourself. And another thing I like to point out for folks that think they're too busy to meditate is, how long is your favorite episode of CSI New Orleans? I think that's about a 1 hour TV show. Family Feud, that's about a half hour there. Most networks, you can watch back-to-back episodes. You know, you can sit and watch TV for 2-3 hours at a shot and not really feel badly about it. But for some reason, when it comes to something like meditation, people hear the time frame of 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and they protest. It's too long. I don't have the time. But if we see the value in it, and that's what I'm hoping to achieve here, help people see the value in it, then we should be willing to put as much time into it as necessary in order to start reaping these benefits. And ideally, we shouldn't just be meditating to reap the benefits. We should be meditating because, for us, it's the right thing to do. But there are benefits to be had nonetheless. And one benefit that we can have, that we can attain through a consistent practice of meditation, 1 hour a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, is stress reduction. And this is where a lot of people first get started in meditation. You know, they're stressed out. They can't sleep, they have high blood pressure, they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, look, you've got high blood pressure, you got the beginnings of heart disease, you're getting to be a physical train wreck, let me put you on some drugs and we'll straighten you all out. And some people say, okay, doctor, let's give me them drugs, you know, what do I have to do? But then there are others of us that think, now, wait a minute. I don't want to be addicted to drugs for the rest of my life, whether they be street drugs or prescription drugs. If I can manage these symptoms without resorting to drugs, for me, that would be preferable. And some of us begin to experiment with alternate therapies, and some good doctors will recommend these alternate therapies like meditation. A local hospital that I've dealt with when it comes to my father's health and my mother's health actually has recommended breath meditation. They don't call it meditation, they call it breathing exercises, but they see the value in it, and they recommend that their patients do this. And they do admit that sometimes you can do this in the place of drug therapy, and that it works. But like everything else in life, it only works if you work it. And you have to put the time in, you have to put the dedication into it. But this is where a lot of people start. You know, reduction of stress, reduction of high blood pressure, using it to treat heart disease. And there are many other diseases that can be treated through the meditative practice. And as you get into meditation and begin to perform it on a consistent level, you will attain the self-knowledge of knowing when you're stressed. They say that high blood pressure is the silent killer, that you don't know when you have high blood pressure. After you've been meditating a little while, you will begin to know when your blood pressure is getting high. I've learned I can feel it in my ears. When my blood pressure shoots up, either through stress or whatever, I know when my blood pressure is getting up there. And I used to run and get the blood pressure machine, which we have at home, and take it and see, okay, what am I up to now? And, you know, take my pulse and look at my blood oxygen and all that stuff. But over time, you know, you find you no longer have to do that. That having the blood pressure machine and the pulse ox machine and the little gizmos and gadgets that you can, you know, wear around your wrist that tell you all your vital signs, it's a good toy for the beginning student, you know, as far as I'm concerned. It's a good toy to have. It can be a useful tool in the beginning. But after a while, after you've built up that self-knowledge to where you're beginning to know yourself on a physical level, you'll find you no longer need the machines to tell you that your pulse is high, that your blood pressure is high, and that your blood oxygen is low. You'll be able to feel that within your physical being. And you will know intuitively that now is the time to sit down, breathe in deeply through the nose, breathe out fully through the nose, focus on the breath, and do your meditation. Or if it helps to play some music, some soothing, calming, tranquil music, do it. You will know that intuitively. You will no longer need the bells and whistles and the toys to tell you that you're stressed out. You'll be able to tell yourself that and know how to manage it. You'll also be able, at least, well, I've been able to discover that if my muscles are aching, you know, if I've had a rough day physically, I can sit down, go into the meditative state, and tell those muscles to relax, and that those muscles will obey me. I don't have to necessarily run and grab a couple of aspirin or a Tylenol, although I still get headaches, and sometimes I need to take something for those headaches. But for muscle aches and pains, for me, that 1 hour of meditation, sometimes less, is enough to tell those muscles, hey, you put in a good day's work, good job, but now it's time to relax. And I've heard stories of other people who are advanced meditators, and by advanced I mean more advanced than myself, and probably more advanced than your average teacher, who have cured themselves of a number of physical maladies just simply through the art of meditation. I heard the story of a soldier who was wounded in Vietnam. He was an American soldier who got shot in the head. And he had fits of epilepsy. And it got to the point where doctors could not tell him how to manage his epilepsy, you know, through physical therapy or through drugs. But he became a Buddhist monk, and he began to focus on controlling his epilepsy. He became mindful and aware of when he was about to go into the epileptic seizure, and then when he knew he was about to go into it, he would tell his body to go into a meditative trance, and he would focus on normalizing his brain chemistry. And he found the root of his own problem. And when he was getting ready to go into the epileptic seizure, he would go into meditation, tell his body to normalize, go into a brief period of meditation, and be able to avoid the epileptic seizure. So we can cure ourselves of a great many maladies if we take meditation to, you know, seriously, and just let it do its work. I see now we have a caller. I'm going to go ahead and take this question. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Hello? Oh, boy. Well, shoot. Hello? I don't hear anybody. Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. Give you a few more seconds. Hello? Okay, we're having some problems here, so. Caller, I'm sorry, we're just going to hang up. Okay, well, that takes us to point two. You know, we talked about know thyself physically, know thyself psychologically. One other fruit of meditation, which some people desire when they first start their meditative practice, is to know yourself on a psychological level. Know when you're getting stressed. Know when you're getting mad. And be able to pinpoint when you're mad. It may sound crazy, but a lot of us get mad without really realizing that we're mad. Some of us can get mad, and to us it's just such a normal state that we think it's just the way it is. And, you know, some people will talk to other people who are mad and say, hey, you need to calm down. You're getting mad. You know, relax. Take a chill pill. And the person will protest, I'm not mad. And just deny that they're mad. And sometimes I don't think it's really denial that they're mad. But it's just they don't have that inner knowledge. They're just not alert to themselves. They're not alert to the fact that, you know, this is a state that they can manage, that they can control, and if they take the appropriate action, they can relieve that anger. They can manage that anger. But a lot of times when we get mad, we may not know we're mad, and then when we become aware of being angry and mad, we tend to blame it on other people. Say, well, it's not my fault. It's my wife's fault or my husband's fault or, you know, the boss at work is a jackass and, you know, I have no choice. They know how to push my buttons. They know how to make me angry. And I'm a victim. I can't control it. And through meditation, when we get to know ourselves on a psychological level, we can begin to understand when we're getting mad, when we're not really being our better self, when we're being more of our angry self, and we can learn what to do about it. We can learn that we don't have to go through life as helpless victims, that we can actually take control. If other people are pushing our buttons, we can do the work necessary to unpush those buttons. And we we can even do the work that is necessary to take those buttons and disconnect them, unwire them. So if somebody comes up and says, you know, that was a lousy job, that was terrible, you're an idiot, take your head out of your ass and wake up and smell the coffee and yada, 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 yada. We can choose to get angry, and that is a choice, or we can choose to let it go, let it slide, and just ignore it. There's a beautiful passage, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this book, and I apologize in advance, but in the Hindu Mahabharata about Krishna, and it's after a major war, after the major conflict in the book has taken place, and many people have died, and one of the mothers looks at Krishna and blames Krishna for the bloodshed and the battle, and she curses Krishna, saying, I have lost my family. May you lose your family in the future. May you taste this bloodshed that I have tasted, and it's all your fault. And she blames him for the pain and the suffering that she has experienced. And the reaction of Krishna in the Mahabharata is beautiful. Krishna looks at this woman with love in his countenance and just says words to the effect, your words are like music and sweet honey. Bless you, my dear woman. And then he just walks off. Rather than choosing to say, hey, lady, I'm sorry for your suffering, but it's not my fault. Get away from me, or else something worse is going to happen to you. He just says, your words are like sweet honey. You know, I love you. Go your way. Be blessed. And that is a choice. We can return evil for evil, or we can return goodness for evil. You know, when somebody gives us a curse, we can acknowledge that they're not being their better self. And we can wish them a blessing that they will become their better self, that they will come to a level of understanding as to why they are in pain and be able to do something about it. And that is one of the fruits of meditation, to know that you are in pain, be it on a physical level or be it on a psychological level, and then do something about it. And one more thing on anger. You know, I'm not one of these people that teach the fluffy bunny syndrome. You know, I don't see anger as always being bad. If we let it consume us, then yes, it can be bad. If we let anger motivate us out of hatred and out of fear and out of our lower, baser emotions, then yes, we shouldn't let anger do that. But when we get mad, and we're mad for the right reason, when we see somebody performing evil in the world, we can do what is necessary, take the action to correct that person, to correct that wrong, to redress that wrong and correct that evil. And we can choose to do it out of love. So when it comes to anger, when it comes to getting mad, we don't have to just swallow our anger and just smile and say, hey, everything's great. Go into a sort of spiritual denial and say, you know, I'm mad, but I'm going to swallow it back and I'm just going to be happy and laugh. We can take that anger and we can focus on doing something positive with it. Transform that energy of anger into an action that's based out of love. We feel anger and stress in this world to awaken us, to let us know that something's not right. And then when we make that discovery that something is not right, we can choose to do something to correct that wrong. So when it comes to dealing with anger, I do not advocate ignoring your anger and just shoving it away and pretending to be nice and happy. Now, what I advocate is learn from that anger. What is that anger trying to teach me about myself, about the outer world, and what can I do? What would be an appropriate response to that anger? And it's not just laughing and smiling and pretending like everything's right with the world. It's becoming blissful, becoming unstressed, thinking clearly, feeling clearly, seeing clearly, and then taking the appropriate action that Spirit advises us to take. And so that is a little bit on knowing yourself physically, psychologically. And I see we're running out of time. I'm going to have to make this a two-parter. But the last one I think I'll concentrate on for now is to know yourself spiritually. Grow in your relationship with the divine, whether you see that as being God or Goddess, or a combination of God and Goddess, or just as being love in general. You know, we all have a higher power, be we religious, non-religious, even atheist. We all have some sort of a higher power. We may call it God or Goddess. We may call it our husband or wife. We may call this higher power the boss at work. You know, but we all have a higher power. And through meditation, we can begin to understand a little bit more deeply what is my relationship with my higher power. I choose to call it God, sometimes the divine or the divine source, and there are many, many other names that we can use. But what is my higher power? Some people have a higher power and they don't know what it is. You know, they may think it's God, but when it comes right down to it, the higher power could be money, you know, material attainment, material wealth, and they confuse that for God. Other people, they may think their higher power is God or Goddess, but when it gets right down to it, their God is really their understanding of God or Goddess, their doctrine, their dogma, their religious practices and religious laws that they were raised with. They tend to take the institution of religion and deify the institution and confuse that for the divine. And after we've been spending some time in meditation, coming to connect with our upper soul, our higher self, and coming to connect with our higher power, the God of, or Goddess of our understanding, then we begin to more fully realize that, you know, there is a difference between being religious and being spiritual. And there is a difference between religious scripture and the divine. And we begin to embrace, you know, this knowledge, to embrace these differences, and to grow more deeply in our connections between us and our higher power. And then once we take that connection on a deeper level, we will begin to see that not only are we connected with the higher power, the source of all things, but we are also connected to other people, to others, to all things around us. You know, if the source of all things that we connect with through meditation is truly the source of all things, then it's also like the key to realizing the unity that we have between between us and every other thing in creation. And after we've been meditating for a while, we come to that spiritual understanding, and we begin to realize and know ourselves more than just as being, you know, Buddhists or Catholics or Baptists or Hindus or Muslims or Jews. We begin to realize ourselves as children of the divine, as human beings, as truly human beings. And we begin to see ourselves for what we are and to see other people for who they are. When we're first born into this world and raised in this world, most of us are raised with the understanding of separation, the illusion of separation. And it can be a mighty scary place to be, thinking that we're separate from God, we're separate from Goddess, we're separated from every other being on this planet, except for those that are very close to us, usually, you know, our parents and our family and our loved ones. But when we learn that we are all one, that we are all connected, and we experience this unity through meditation, and we don't just grasp it psychologically, but we experience it on a heart level, then we can't help but grow spiritually. To me, that is the fruit of spiritual growth, to be able to see those connections, that unity for what it is. And so when we begin to know ourselves spiritually, we begin to see, okay, what are the spiritual blockages that I was raised with? And for some, that may be our religious doctrine and dogma that we've misunderstood. For others, it may be fear. It may be just fear, anger, hatred, those things. But when we learn to see our spiritual blockages, then again, we begin to intuitively understand what we need to do to step out and clear those spiritual blockages. And for some, I mean, these fruits may begin to appear after, oh gosh, a few months of meditation. And then others, it may take several years of meditation. And for still others, you know, it may take decades. I mean, this is not something that can be rushed. You know, this is the work of a lifetime. And we need to be able to give this work the time that it needs in order to sort itself out. I don't have time to do it in this broadcast, so we're going to continue this on, I think, next Wednesday's broadcast. The two other levels of self-knowledge, this is know thyself karmically. Know what your karma is. Know why it is. What are the life lessons you're learning in this life? And how does that relate to your position in life that you have now? And what can past life memories teach us about our current karma? I realize when it comes to stuff like reincarnation and past life memories, these are things that have a high giggle factor, because in our Western culture, we're taught that there's nothing serious about reincarnation, that, you know, if people who think they're reincarnated are nuts. You know, we think about folks that go around saying, I am Napoleon, or I was Napoleon Bonaparte, or I was Jesus Christ. And when it comes to my reincarnation memories, I can't claim anything high and mighty like that. I think I was a musician in one past life, among other things, and I was a failed hitman in another past life experience back in the 1920s. But, you know, nothing on the level of being Jesus Christ or Napoleon Bonaparte. life memories, for those of us who have accessed them or would like to access them, can teach us why we are going through some of the things we are going through now on this level. Why things happen to good people. Why bad things happen to good people. And the reason for that, we can uncover that through meditation. And I'll go into more depth on that in next Wednesday's broadcast. And then also I will talk about knowing thyself shamanically. You know, learning how to turn to spirit and regard spirit, as you understand spirit, as a teacher, as your highest and greatest spiritual teacher. Learn how to connect to spirit, either through the practice of meditation or through the practice of deep dreaming, or what I like to call sleep meditation, and it, just how to connect with spirit as you would an earthly teacher, and ask questions. Why are these things happening to me? What is my connection with the higher realm? What can I expect out of this situation, out of this circumstance that I currently find myself in? And I think if we ask these questions of spirit and are willing to listen to spirit, we will gain some answers. Sometimes the answer may be pretty detailed and pretty in-depth. And other times, well, we may not be ready for the answer. And so the answer may be silence, or the answer may be rather superficial. Perhaps a brief word of encouragement and little more. But if we learn to turn to spirit and regard spirit as we understand spirit, as our teacher, as the Christ within or the Buddha within, or the teacher within, then we will find that we can ask these deep spiritual questions. We can turn our concerns over to spirit, seek guidance, ask questions, and learn to listen and recognize the answer. And so next Wednesday, I will get more deeply into those two topics, knowing yourself on a karmic level, and knowing yourself on a shamanic level. But once again, this all takes time. And we have to be willing to put the time in if we want to get to these deeper fruits. And ultimately, too, now I recognize that up until this point, I have been speaking about meditation as if it is a means to an end. And that is not fully true, nor is it fully proper. Meditation is an end in and of itself. It's not necessarily a tool that we use to gain other things, although we do use it as such, and I have used it as such. But meditation in its purest form is what we do to open ourselves up to our higher self and to our higher power in whatever way we understand that, and just connect with this higher power. And the purpose of this connection isn't to gain worldly wealth or material wealth or even deep, deep, deep spiritual wisdom. The purpose behind connecting is simply to connect. It's like sitting down with a friend. You know, you don't sit down with a friend necessarily to clinch a business deal. I mean, you might. But if it's a good friend, a close friend, somebody that you enjoy spending time with, you don't sit down with that friend expecting some material reward. You sit down with that friend because it's a good thing to do, because you enjoy the connection. And it's the same way with meditation and our relationship with spirit. We do it because it's a good thing to do. We don't do it to gain, although there are gains to be had. But these gains are secondary compared to forging and forming that connection and enjoying that connection and living that connection. Until later, this is Frater Ralph from Temple of the Infinite Universe. If you want to check us out online, you can find our website at www.hermetictemple.com. And if you want to check us out, we'd be happy to have you do that. But until then, we will see you later, and I will close with a little piece by Celtic Reggae Revival, Gandhi's Triumph. Blessings be upon your day.